Hey everyone, welcome back. Today we're going to be diving deep into the world of the prophet Amos.
Oh yeah,
this guy was a total truth teller, calling out injustice at a time when, you know, everybody thought everything was going great in the kingdoms of Israel and Judah.
Right, yeah, when things were good.
So we're talking 8th century BC. And on the surface, both of these kingdoms are, you know, economically booming, mm-hmm. but we're going to be digging deeper. And interpreting some of the, you know, the problems that were beneath all that prosperity.
Yeah, the under the surface stuff.
Right, exactly. And to help us unpack all this, we're going to be looking at excerpts from a lecture by Robert Van Ooy.
Okay.
Who's an expert on the book of Amos.
Yeah, great source.
So what's fascinating to me is that Amos wasn't even from the wealthy northern kingdom of Israel.
Right.
Right? He was from Judah.
Yeah, he was from the south.
Down in the south. And he felt called to deliver this really challenging message to the north.
Like he was sent on a mission, almost.
Yeah, it's kind of like he was sent on a mission to, like, burst their bubble.
Yeah.
A little bit.
To shake things up.
Right. And what I find really interesting is that Van Ooy suggests that he might have even been hinting at the threat of the Assyrian Empire.
Oh, wow.
Without directly naming them.
Interesting.
Yeah.
How do you see that?
Well, he uses this phraise
from
Lebo Hamath, to the Valley of the Araba,
right.
to describe the coming oppression,
uh-huh.
which kind of mirrors the boundaries of Israel as restored by God.
I see.
That are mentioned in the book of Jonah.
Okay, yep.
And you might remember that Jonah was sent to preach repentance to the Assyrian capital, Nineveh.
Right, right.
So it's kind of like Amos is using this geographic reference to, like, link these two stories and maybe foreshadow what could happen if Israel doesn't change its ways.
Like a little clue.
Yeah, like a little clue.
Yeah, I like that.
A little ominous.
Yeah, a little foreboding.
And this was, like I said, this was a time of great economic prosperity.
Right. Everybody's, you know, doing well, supposedly.
Right. But Amos wasn't buying it.
Yeah.
He saw right through that. And he was calling out these deep social inequalities that were kind of hidden beneath all that wealth.
Yeah, so Van Ooy really brings this to life in his lecture.
He does. He paints this vivid picture of, you know, the rich living it up in their houses,
mm-hmm.
adorned with ivory and indulging in these lavish feasts and lounging on ivory beds.
So why was ivory such a big deal back then?
Well, I think ivory back then was like the equivalent of like a luxury sports car or like a designer handbag today.
Okay, so
it was super expensive.
Just a huge status symbol.
A huge status symbol. It was imported from far off lands. You know?
They had to really go out of their way to get this.
Yeah, it was like the ultimate sign that you were, you know, one of the elite.
You've made it if you have ivory.
Yeah.
Okay, so we get it. Rich, we're living large.
Mm-hmm.
But where does the injustice come in?
Well, Amos contrasts this extravagance with the plight of the poor and the vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
He talks about how the wealthy were, you know, trampling the needy and exploiting them just to make a profit.
Wow. He
even says that they, you know, sell the righteous for silver and the needy for a pair of sandals.
Oh, wow. That's harsh.
It is. It's like saying that a person's life is only worth a pair of shoes, you know?
Yeah, dehumanizing.
Yeah, it's really dehumanizing.
So what I think is really interesting is how Amos uses this kind of legal framework.
Yeah.
It's called a covenant lawsuit to deliver his message.
It's like he's putting Israel on trial with God as the judge.
I like that analogy. Yeah, it's like a courtroom drama.
Yeah, and it shows how seriously they took their relationship with God. You know, they understood it as this binding agreement.
Yeah, a covenant.
It's a covenant.
So they're not holding up their end of the bargain.
And so by highlighting that failure to uphold their end of the bargain, he's really emphasizing how serious their actions are.
Like, you're breaking the contract, and there are going to be consequences.
Exactly. And it's not just about, you know, breaking some abstract moral code.
Right.
It's about betraying the very foundation of their relationship with God.
Yeah, that's powerful.
And Van Ooy actually breaks down the elements of this covenant lawsuit.
Okay.
And it's fascinating how it all kind of unfolds.
Yeah, how does it work?
So it starts with this indictment.
Okay,
right?
Like outlining the philbas.
Outlining all of their violations, okay. Right? And that includes things like oppressing the poor,
mm-hmm.
engaging in corrupt practices.
Okay.
And then he follows that with a reminder of God's faithfulness.
Okay.
You know, all the ways that God has protected and provided for them.
Right. All the good things that God has done.
Yeah. Like delivering them from slavery in Egypt.
Right. Right.
And then he says, but you guys have ignored my warnings.
Yeah.
And then there's this looming sentence.
Uh-oh.
And he doesn't say exactly what it is, but it's very clear that judgment is coming.
Yeah. Like the gavel's about to drop.
Yeah.
So one thing I've always found interesting about Amos is this idea of knowing God.
Yes.
And Vannelli talks about this a bit in his lecture.
Yes.
In Amos 3.2, he says, "You only have I known of all the families of the earth. Therefore, I will punish you for all your sins."
Right.
It seems strange, doesn't it?
It does seem strange that knowing God would lead to punishment.
Yeah, you think it would be the opposite.
Yeah, you would think it would be like a good thing.
You would think so.
Right.
So how do we understand that?
Well, I think you have to remember that this idea of knowing in the ancient Near East wasn't just about like head knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
It was about a deeper
relationship.
Much deeper relational understanding.
I see.
And a commitment to living in accordance with that relationship.
Yeah. So it's more than just knowing the facts about God.
Right. It's about putting it into action.
Yeah. Living it out.
Yeah, exactly.
So for Israel, knowing God meant upholding their end of the covenant.
Mm.
It meant caring for the vulnerable and pursuing justice.
Right.
So when they failed to do that, it wasn't just a social or political problem.
Right.
It was a direct violation of their relationship with God.
Right. And this idea that true knowledge of God involves action is something that we see throughout the Bible.
It comes up again and again.
Yeah. And so what I'm curious about is, how does this concept of knowing God connect to those covenant curses we were talking about earlier?
Right.
Were those curses simply about punishment, or was there a deeper purpose behind them?
I think for Amos, those curses weren't just arbitrary punishments.
Right.
They were a consequence of straying from the path that God had laid out for them.
Mm.
And that path included justice and righteousness as integral parts of their relationship with God.
Yeah. So when they neglected the vulnerable and allowed injustice to thrive, they were essentially inviting those curses upon themselves.
Yeah. It's like a natural consequence of their choices.
Not just God being vengeful.
Right. It was more like, you made your bed, now you have to lie in it.
Exactly. And to really drive this point home, Amos uses all this vivid imagery and language pulled straight from those covenant curses, the ones that are outlined in Leviticus and Deuteronomy.
Yeah, he's drawing on those familiar texts.
Yeah, he talked about famine, drought, blight, locusts.
All the classic images of hardship, devastation.
It's like he's holding up a mirror to their own scriptures and saying, look, it's all right here.
You know, this is what happens.
Yeah, it's spelled out for you.
When you stray from the path.
You know, this is what happens when you stray from the path. But even amidst all these warnings, there's also this recurring theme of hope.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
Throughout the book, there's this repeated refrain, "Yet you have not returned to me."
Mm.
It's like this plea, a desperate call for them to turn back.
To choose a different path.
To choose a different path before it's too late.
Yeah, before it's too late.
And he even gives them glimpses of what that return could look like.
Right. So it's not all doom and gloom. There's still hope.
So even though he's delivering this like scathing critique of their behavior.
Right.
He's not totally closing the door on the possibility of redemption.
No, not at all.
Right.
In fact,
he's
holding the door wide open.
Yeah.
But he's also making it very clear that this return isn't about just like going through the motions of religious rituals or offering empty sacrifices. Mm-hmm. It's about a genuine transformation of the heart.
A change that's reflected in how they treat each other.
Yeah.
Especially those who are most vulnerable.
Exactly.
It seems like Amos is saying that true faith isn't about checking boxes, but it's about rolling up your sleeves and getting involved in making the world a better place.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment.
Would you say that message is relevant for us today?
Absolutely. It's a timeless struggle, really.
I mean, we still see this tension between outward religious displays and the call to actually live out our faith through social action.
Absolutely. And Amos, he challenged the people of Israel
to
look beyond those empty rituals and to really let their faith be a driving force for positive change
in their society.
Yeah.
And that challenge is just as relevant for us today.
For sure.
It makes you wonder, if Amos were alive today, what would he be saying to us?
Right.
How would his message land in our modern world?
Oh, I think he would have plenty to say.
I mean, the themes of economic disparity.
Right.
Like exploitation of the vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
The misuse of power and religious authority.
Yeah.
I mean, these issues are still rampant in our world today.
They're still with us, unfortunately.
So, in a way, he's still speaking to us across the centuries.
He is.
He's calling us to examine our own priorities.
Yeah.
To look beyond surface-level piety.
Mm-hmm.
And to truly live out our values in a way that uplifts the marginalized and challenges injustice wherever we see it.
I agree.
So how do we respond to his message in a way that feels both meaningful and practical?
That's a great question.
I mean, it's easy to get overwhelmed by the enormity of these problems.
It is. It is.
That he highlights.
But I think the key is to focus on the actionable elements of his message.
Yeah.
Remember that emphasis on repentance and turning away from injustice?
Mm-hmm.
That's
where
we can start.
So it's about taking personal responsibility for our actions.
Yeah.
And making a conscious effort to contribute to a more just world.
Exactly. And it's about aligning ourselves with those who are already doing this work, the modern day Moses who are out there courageously speaking truth to power.
Challenging the status quo.
Yes. Advocating for those who are marginalized.
And by supporting their work.
Yeah.
And finding ways to use our own skills and resources.
Right.
To amplify their voices.
Exactly.
We can become part of that collective effort toward justice.
That's a great way to put it.
So it's not just about individual acts of charity or kindness.
Mm-hmm.
It's about engaging in a more systemic approach to creating a more just and equitable world.
It is. And it involves some introspection, too.
Yeah.
Remember, Amos called for a transformation of the heart.
Right.
So before we rush out to change the world, it might be worthwhile to pause and examine our own hearts and motivations.
Right.
Are we truly committed to living out our values?
Mm-hmm.
Or are we actually complicit in perpetuating these systems of injustice?
That's a tough question to ask ourselves.
It is.
But a crucial one.
A crucial one.
It's easy to point fingers at others.
Right.
But true change starts with looking inward and being honest about our own role in the systems that we want to change.
Yeah, you did the nail on the head.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the most powerful takeaways from Amos's message.
Yeah.
This idea that true change starts from within.
It's about transforming our own hearts and minds.
Yes.
So that we become agents of justice and compassion in the world.
Exactly.
It's a reminder that social change isn't just about enacting policies or donating to charities.
Right.
It's about fundamentally changing the way we see ourselves and our relationship to others.
That's a great point.
And that kind of change can be both deeply personal and incredibly powerful.
Absolutely.
It can ripple outwards, influencing our families, our communities, and ultimately the world around us.
You all starts with us.
It's a journey that requires constant attention and effort, but it's a journey filled with hope.
I agree.
Yeah.
And as we delve deeper into the concluding section of the book of Amos, you'll see how this thread of hope is woven into his message of restoration and renewal.
You know, it's interesting, even after all the, you know, the tough talk and the warnings, the book of Amos doesn't end on a totally bleak note.
That's true.
Fanoy points out there's this really hopeful shift toward the end.
Yeah.
So in those final verses, Amos talks about rebuilding David's fallen tent.
Right. Rebuilding the fallen tent.
And that's not a literal tent.
Right. It's a metaphor.
Yeah. It's a metaphor for restoring Israel to this place of honor and strength.
Right.
And he even paints this picture of abundance. He says the plowman will overtake the reaper.
So like a time of plenty.
Yeah, it sounds almost like utopian.
A time of peace and prosperity.
Yeah.
And so it sounds like even though he's been, you know, laying out the consequences of their actions, he's also offering this glimpse of hope.
Right. And what's possible if they change course.
Yeah, a vision of a better future.
Exactly. What I'm curious about is this restored Israel just about material wealth? Or is there something deeper going on?
I think it's definitely not just about overflowing granaries and fattened calves.
Okay.
It's about a completely renewed relationship with God, one that's built on justice, righteousness, and faithfulness.
So it's like a total reset button for their society.
Yeah, like hitting the reset button.
A chance to create a world where, you know, the very values that Amos has been championing are actually woven into the fabric of their lives.
Yeah, so it's not just about going back to the good old days.
Right.
It's about building something new.
Yeah, building something new and better.
And better.
And that's what makes his message so powerful.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just about pointing out problems.
Right.
It's about inspiring that vision.
That vision.
For a better future.
Yeah.
And offering a roadmap for how to get there.
And a way forward.
It reminds me of a lot of the activists who are fighting for social change today.
Mm.
They're not just criticizing the way things are.
Right.
They're offering this vision for a more just and equitable world.
Yeah.
And they're mobilizing people to make that vision a reality.
Yeah, I love that connection. And it really speaks to the enduring relevance of Amos's message.
Right.
He was challenging the people of his time to imagine a different world, one built on those values of justice and righteousness.
And that challenge is still relevant for us today.
Absolutely.
So as we kind of wrap up our deep dive into the world of Amos,
okay,
what are some of the key takeaways that we can apply to our own lives?
Well, I think the biggest one is that importance of aligning our actions with our values.
Right.
Amos was constantly pushing the Israelites to let their faith be reflected in their treatment of others, particularly the most vulnerable.
He didn't want empty words or rituals.
Right. He wanted action.
Yeah.
He wanted to see concrete action that made a real difference in people's lives.
And that's a good reminder for us that, you know,
yeah.
true faith isn't just about what we believe.
Mm-hmm.
It's about how we live.
Right.
How we treat others.
Yeah.
And how we contribute to creating a more just and compassionate world.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think another important takeaway is that we need to be willing to challenge the status quo.
Yes.
Amos didn't shy away from confronting the powerful.
Right.
And holding them accountable for their actions.
He was fearless in that regard.
And he reminds us that truth justice requires us to not only address those individual acts of wrongdoing, but also to examine the systems and structures that perpetuate injustice.
The root causes of the problem.
So it's about recognizing that, you know, personal responsibility is important.
Yes.
But it's not enough.
Not enough on its own.
Right. We also need to be engaged citizens advocating for change.
Yeah.
And working to dismantle those systems of oppression.
Absolutely. And I think it's about recognizing the Amoses of our own time.
Those individuals and organizations who are, you know, fearlessly speaking truth to power, challenging injustice, and fighting for a better world.
It's about supporting their work.
Supporting their work, amplifying their voices.
Exactly.
Finding ways to contribute to their efforts.
So Amos is calling us to be both deeply reflective and actively engaged.
It's about examining our own hearts and motivations while also working to create a more just and equitable world.
Yeah, for everyone.
For everyone.
And I think you've captured it perfectly. Yeah. And that's the beauty of Amos's message. Mm. It's both timeless and timely.
Yeah.
It speaks to those deepest longings of the human heart for justice, for compassion, for a world where everyone can thrive.
And it challenges us to take action, to be part of the solution, and to never stop striving for a better future.
Well said.
So as we leave the world of Amos and step back into our own, let's carry his message with us.
Yes.
Let's be inspired by his unwavering commitment to justice, his courage in challenging the powerful.
Absolutely.
And his unwavering belief in the possibility of a transformed world.
Yeah.
And let's find ways to live out his message in our own lives, working toward a future where the values that he championed become a reality for all.
Beautiful.
Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into the Book of Amos.